carries a timeline and a copy of Phil's PowerPoint. And most of the work we're going to be doing tonight is on Phil's PowerPoint and the decision document. Since the April Council meeting, the AP met on June 2nd, and the committee met twice on May 27th and June 3rd to develop recommendations on the range of alternatives for further development and analysis in the DEIS. The Mid-Atlantic Council met in New York on June 10th and accepted the committee's recommendations. What we're going to do first is Phil's going to give us a PowerPoint on a summary of the plan and the status and the recommendations, and then we're going to turn over to Maggie for a brief report from the AP, and then I have one motion. You all set, Phil?
Okay. The PowerPoint is, you've got the handouts, but I would encourage you to reference not only the decision document, but also the decision document will refer you to certain items in the PDT report because you couldn't fit it all in a little box. The first couple of slides I'm going to blow through in the interest of the time. Everybody knows about the history of the FMP. What the current measures are, but if anybody wants me to slow down, just ask. The monkfish stock status, everybody knows that the 2007 Data Poor Stocks Working Group concluded that monkfish is rebuilt and overfishing is not occurring. And I'm going to have to emphasize again the substantial uncertainty associated with that assessment and that these results need to be viewed with caution, and also point out the terminal year of the assessment was 2006. This table summarizes the stock status and the reference points relative to those, the fishing mortality rate below the threshold, the biomass above the target. This is the purpose of Amendment 5, which was decided in the November Council meeting, primarily to establish the ACLs, AMs, and other reference points to comply with the Magnuson-Stevens Reauthorization Act and National Standard 1 guidelines. The second priority is to set the target tack, days at sea, and trip limit specifications to replace the expiring Framework 4 specifications. And the third is to consider adopting ITQs and or sector management programs, time permitting. The timeline is such that the DEIS is scheduled for approval in November of 2009, final measures in April of 2010 with public hearings in between, and submit the final document in June for effectiveness May 2011. With a November approval, I will have to essentially have a document to the regional office for review in September. And I've indicated on the time this timeline that is under, I think it's document 4 or 5 that you have in your table, has the milestones associated with the DEIS. And people can refer to that because I think it's important as you go through with your decision today to keep in mind the time it requires to prepare the documents, have them reviewed and distributed before you make your final decision. That is document number 4. Excuse me. Proceeding with the first group of recommendations has to do with the ACLs, AMs, and other management reference points. The MSY control rule specified is F threshold times B target. It's a long-term catch, so there may be cases when current biomass is above the target that the overfishing limit would be above the MSY. The values are associated with that in the red on the bottom, 17,053 metric tons for the north, 25,487 for the south. Now, this being a control rule, approach when the new assessment comes out with revised estimates of F threshold and B target. If they do revise them, then the values associated with MSY will adjust. The overfishing limit control rule is F threshold times current estimate of biomass. And as I noted, it may fluctuate above and below MSY depending on the stock size. With current biomass above the target, the overfishing limit is above MSY. It's an annual catch as opposed to a long-term average or equilibrium catch. Overfishing limit is calculated to be 22,729 metric tons for the north and 28,263 for the south. And as with the MSY values, these will be re-estimated with the next assessment, and current biomass is likely to be different than it was in 2006, higher or lower. I don't know. In terms of optimum yield, the Act requires us to specify optimum yield. This does not have immediate implications for management measures that we have to develop, and the committee has decided to defer the decision on the OY recommendation and work on it over the summer because we can proceed with developing and analyzing management measures independent of having a statement of optimum yield. You heard from the Scientific and Statistical Committee's the recommendation on ABC. Essentially, they're recommending an interim ABC because the uncertainty associated with the estimate of the overfishing limit is not known. It's not quantifiable. The two parameters, fishing mortality and biomass, are independently derived, and so it's not really a true estimate of scientific uncertainty, and therefore what they want to do, what they recommended, is to look at the average exploitation rate during the period when the biomass was stable or increasing and the current estimate of exploitable biomass. With those two variables, the product of those variables, you have an ABC in the north of 17,485 metric tons and 13,326 in the south. The Oversight Committee is recommending setting the ACL equal to ABC. ACL is the level of annual catch that serves as the basis for invoking accountability measures and to prevent exceeding the overfishing limit. It may be set annually or on a multi-year basis, and it cannot exceed the overfishing limit. There, since we are accounting for scientific uncertainty, at least in theory, in setting the ABC, and the committee is proposing to use a proactive accountability measure, an ACT, an annual catch target, set below the limit, to account for management uncertainty. There's no other technical basis for recommending something other than setting ACL equal ABC, and that is consistent with National Standard 1 guidelines. I will, if you want, pause for a minute if anybody has questions on the reference points before I get into the accountability measures.
Dr. Pierce.
Yeah, Phil, I still don't understand why the overfishing level for the southern area in particular has dropped so significantly from the 28,200 metric tons to 13,368. The bullet indicates that that's based on, it's a product of average exploitation from 2000 to 2006. I don't understand how scientific uncertainty factors into that particular logic for, you know, for as described here. Can you elaborate a little bit? How does that equate to scientific uncertainty? How did the
As Steve explained yesterday, and I don't know if he's still here, he may be able to illustrate this more clearly than I can. We don't have estimates of the probabilities around the point estimate of the overfishing limit. There's no quantifiable way to evaluate scientific uncertainty. So they took a precautionary approach at setting an interim ABC with the recognition that we have an assessment coming up in 2010. And this is what they came up with. They're not trying to say that this fully accounts for scientific uncertainty in the estimate of the overfishing limit, but it does provide a buffer in a defensible way, I think, to the overfishing limit. Because you're applying the exploitation rate during a period of time when the stock was increasing to the current estimate of biomass, which is above the biomass target. There's, you know, we did try to enumerate for the SSC at the first meeting all of the sources of scientific uncertainty that could be considered. They weren't quantified. There was no, you know, way to put a value on each of those components, and it didn't really get much consideration, really. The focus was more on whether or not there was a distribution around the estimate of OFL, and there isn't.
Anyone else? Sally.
Thanks. Can you just explain how in a data-poor stock, and I understand we've talked a lot about where you account for scientific uncertainty, where you account for management uncertainty, but how you set the ACL equal to ABC with a data-poor stock? And where that recommendation comes from with the committee.
It came from the PDT, and I mean, we have management uncertainty and we have scientific uncertainty. And if you're approaching the system or this whole array of reference points with the idea that you will have a catch target set below your ACL as a proactive accountability measure that takes into account uncertainty in the effectiveness of your management system to keep catch at a specific point, and you have scientific uncertainty accounted for in setting ABC, I don't know where you would, on what basis you would come up with a different value for the catch limit, because there's no basis for it. If we weren't using a catch target, then of course the limit would probably have to be lower than the biological catch.
Anyone else? Okay, Phil.
Okay, well, we started to look under the rock there for what the accountability measures are. As everyone knows, the purpose of the accountability measures is to prevent or respond to exceeding the ACLs, and they take into account management uncertainty. The Oversight Committee is proposing both proactive accountability measures to prevent exceeding the ACL and a reactive accountability measure if the ACL is exceeded. The reactive accountability measure is that's being proposed is to deduct the ACL overage in pounds, in weight, from the ACT and adjust the management measures in the second year after the overage year. That's because we don't know the full extent of the overage until the fishing year is over and the data is processed, and we have also now not just landings data to deal with, but catch data, observer data, and so on, and then to implement them at the start of the following fishing year. There is a fallback here that if the councils don't take appropriate action on that information, that the regional administrator will use a formulaic approach to adjust the days at sea and trip limits and implement that by notice action. I will point out here that as one of the underlying philosophies of this fishery management plan, since monkfish is caught to varying degrees in just about every fishery. The incidental catch fishery takes precedence, and we have incidental catch limits to minimize bycatch, but otherwise are not controlling those other fisheries on account of their incidental catch. We control directly the directed fishery through, right now, the days at sea and trip limits. And this would continue that philosophy by, regardless of who might be to blame for the overage, the responsibility through this FMP is on the directed fishery. They will take the adjustments. One of the reasons why this has worked relatively well and the stock has continued to grow, the stocks have continued to grow since the FMP was implemented, is that when we anticipate the incidental catch from year to year, you know, it's a pretty valid assumption that there aren't going to be major changes for the next year or two. So we carve out what we expect the incidental catch will be in the next year or two based on what it was in the most recent year. And that seems to have worked. I'm not sure that's going to continue to work when we have such major changes in fishing effort and fishing patterns going forward. But right now, this is what the reactive accountability measure proposal is. The proactive accountability measures is the annual catch target. It would be the basis for setting the management measures, whether you are using days at sea and trip limits or allocations of ITQ or sector shares. It's the number that we operate on, after accounting for incidental catch in the other non-directed fisheries and discards. The Oversight Committee is proposing three options for setting the ACT for each of the management areas. So there are three for the north and three for the south, based on the current target tack and landings plus the estimated discard rates. And we'll get into the details on these in just a minute. We anticipate, this is a target, and since there is so much management uncertainty, the actual catch is likely to fluctuate above or below our catch target. And that in itself would not trigger an action. Only if we reach the limit would there be a reaction, because this is in itself an accountability measure. And the strategy is that we set these for 3 years and evaluate prior to the end of that period why we undershot or overshot the target and make adjustments as appropriate through the next specification setting. The thing to consider in evaluating the options for the ACT is how much risk you as a council are willing to take in setting the ACT as it relates to the ACL, and considering what the consequences of exceeding the ACL are. So, if you think that it's okay to take a chance at getting there, you put the ACT higher, and if you feel that the consequences of exceeding the ACL are something you really, really don't want to get to, then you would consider a lower ACT. But that's really the zone there in between the ACT and the ACL is the buffer. We're not designing this ACT here based on the buffer. In other words, when the ACL changes, the ACT won't necessarily change. If you were to approach this by saying we want a 30% buffer, and the ACL changes, the ACT would change automatically. And the difficulty with that is an assessment coming in 2010. We're going out to public hearings in January with a range of options for days at sea, trip limits, and perhaps catch share components. based on an ACT that may change. So we're delinking the ACL and the ACT. The buffer will change with the new assessment, but the targets won't change unless, of course, the new limits come out and they're lower than the targets or unacceptably close. For the northern management area, there are three options, as I said. 5,375 metric tons is the current TAC, which is actually a landings limit, plus estimated discards. In the north, discards are estimated in the last assessment at 7% of the landings. The second option is a 50% increase in the target TAC at 8,063 metric tons, and the third option, 10,750 metric tons. In the decision document where I describe these, I also point out the size of the buffer that would result from these TACs relative to the proposed ABC. The southern area, which has in the last couple of years exceeded its target TAC, we have three options. The 6,579 is the current target TAC plus the discards. And if you were to just back of the envelope type of calculation, since they've exceeded the current TAC with the existing set of days at sea and trip limits and management measures in place, those would have to be reduced at the current target TAC. But that TAC establishes a buffer of 50% to the ACL. If you were to keep the days at sea and trip limits and look at their landings under the existing management measures, and add in the discards, which are estimated 22%, I believe, in the north, in the south, then the ACT would be 9,211. And since the stock is rebuilt and the committee considered the buffer between the ACL and the overfishing limit, it's quite a substantial buffer, that they wanted to offer an option for consideration, which would be a 75% increase in the target TAC and produce ACT of 11,469, which is a 13% buffer to the ACL. Those are the accountability measures, and I'll pause there before I get the next block of measures are specifications and adjustments to the current management measures.
Phil, you... I think I heard you say on the reactive AMs, you're not so sure that your ability to rely on tuning days at sea and trip limits is going to be as effective as it has been?
What I think I was saying is that independent of the reactive AMs, the setting of days at sea and trip limits and other management measures for the directed fishery relies on first an assumption of what the incidental catch is going to be, and that's taken off the top. And then the remaining fish are distributed to the directed fisheries. And I think that would happen in either a sector proposal or some other proposal besides the days at sea. I'm not sure how it would work out with an ITQ, because I'm not sure how the incidental catch works in with an ITQ. But in terms of the directed fishery, they are the residual. Now, with all the changes occurring, not only in the groundfish plan, but in pretty much every plan we have, and the mid-Atlantic plans that might be changing, I'm not sure what the effort picture is going to look like.
and what the incidental catch is going to be on non-directed monkfish trips, that it's probably not going to be the same as it was in the past. So that raises questions as to whether or not the assumptions will hold up going forward.
That was something the PDT's thought about a little bit?
Yes.
I would assume the committee's going to continue to work on putting more certainty into the design of a...
Well, it certainly complicates the analysis of the management measures because we do have to assume something about incidental catch. We do have an obligation to minimize bycatch and to the extent practicable. So there are such a wide range of fisheries that have to varying degrees incidental catch of monkfish, and we need to consider those in developing the management program for the directed fishery.
Any other questions for Phil? Dave Preble?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Phil, I you mentioned that I have a couple of questions here on the ACT. You mentioned that the choice of the ACT, the three options that you lay out, would depend upon how much risk the council was willing to accept. And I was looking for some sort of analysis of risk. I don't see anything here that would indicate what risk we're looking at.
It's, I should have said comfort.
Oh, okay. All right. Now, just, you know, one is 51% below, one is 31, and one's 14, roughly,
right,
in round numbers. And I'm not sure how... what basis you'd make that,
yeah.
How do we make that choice?
I think that, I'm not sure I have the SSC report with me here, but they, in the second recommendation that they made, put it very well. It's really, they weighed in on this a little bit, and I forget how they said it, but it's the choice is kind of what you're willing to accept there.
Okay.
They said annual catch targets should be based on the performance of the management system that is decided upon by the council, including the desired risk of exceeding the annual catch limit and the system of accountability measures. The council should consider the sources of management and uncertainty, e.g. in-season monitoring of landings and discards, to determine the appropriate buffer between ACL and ACT. And so really it's your comfort zone, looking at the big picture. We can't quantify it. I did the same thing with management uncertainty as I did with scientific uncertainty, and we provided the committee with a list of sources of management uncertainty. But you can't put a value on them. And you can even say what they are, and you can say that this is a very important one, but you don't know how many, you know, what the groundfish effort picture is going to look like in their incidental catch of monkfish going forward. What this, you know, there's also the, you know, question of recruitment. If there's a recruitment event, there's certain our catch rates are going to go up that we didn't anticipate, and therefore the days and management measures that we have in place don't necessarily fit the biological scenario.
Yeah, I understand that. I just was concerned when you used the word risk. That's what threw me off. I thought
risk
had
in the soft sense of risk.
Okay. That,
you know.
Anyone else? Okay, Phil.
The next block of items that I'll discuss are the management measures associated with the current fishery management plan. That is the days at sea and trip limits for the directed fishery and some associated management measures. We're going to continue a three-year program. The industry has always asked for stability in the fishery, and there was a period of time when the target would change every year and the associated days at sea and trip limits would change every year, and particularly in the south. And they've indicated, you know, for planning purposes and ordering gear and everything else to hold the number for 3 years as long as you're not overfishing. So we're going to continue with that. And in the DEIS, we will provide, as we have in the past, a range of days at sea and trip limit combinations to achieve the ACT. So for each ACT option, we'll have an option that increases the days at sea only and keeps the trip limits where they are. We'll have an option that increases the trip limits and keeps the days at sea where they are. And we'll have an option that is a combination, and then somewhere within that range, you know, ultimately the council can select their preferred alternative. There are a couple of changes to the Days at Sea program that have been recommended by the committee. One of them is to allow vessels to exceed the trip limit for one day's limit, provided the vessel reports via VMS or cell phone prior to crossing the demarcation line, announcing that they have an overage of their trip limit. And there are three options here for consideration, which would automatically charge that vessel's days at sea account either if, for a gill netter, it's 2 times 15 hours. They're charged 15 hours for a trip, and they can bring in a full day's trip limit on the 15. So if they have two, they get 2 times 15. Second one would be 2 times 24. And the third option for consideration is 24 hours and 1 minute, which many vessels do now instead of two trips of 15 hours. The second measure that they're proposing here would be for vessels that have a groundfish permit and a Category C or D monkfish permit. Right now, if they're using a monkfish day and they still have days at sea, groundfish days at sea allocated, then those days are burned up. And once they're used up, then they go monkfish only days at sea. What we're proposing here, what the committee's proposing here, is that a vessel can decide which days would be monkfish only and which days would be groundfish only. And the reason for that, we got some comments in southern New England that there's a groundfish fishery that they traditionally fished, which is how they got groundfish days in the first place. But it occurs in November, December, and by that time they've used them up because they've been monk fishing. They would like to be able to go monk only in the May, June, July period and then use their groundfish days with their monkfish days later on in the year. There are a couple of proposals to adjust the RSA research set-aside program. One of them is to allow vessels to carry over unused research set-aside days. We've received a number of comments that vessels are foregoing some compensation days because the grant's not awarded until sometime after the fishing year started, and by the time the get around to doing the compensation fishing, the fishing year is over. So we have two options here. One is that they may use those anytime during the following year or in the first 3 months of the following year. And these both would be options for consideration in the DEIS. Another adjustment to the RSA program is to allow changes to the RSA program be done through a framework. Right now they are only allowable under an amendment. There's some proposed changes to the incidental limits. For the one proposal the committee is recommending for consideration is for the southern management area for trip gillnet vessel to allow them to set the incidental limit when they're on a groundfish but not a monkfish day at sea, the same as trawl vessels, which is 300 pounds of tail weight per day at sea, as opposed to what applies on a gillnet vessel, day gillnet vessel. The second incidental limit change they're proposing is in the northern management area. The monkfish incidental limit, which is currently 300 pounds of tails per day at sea, when you're on a groundfish but not a monkfish day, they're proposing to consider increasing that to 500 pounds of tails per day at sea. and also to increase the scallop dredge incidental limit when they're on a scallop day at sea, but not a monkfish day at sea, which is currently 300 pounds tails per day to 400 or 500. There are two options there for consideration. Okay, that I'm going to pause there because the next group deals with vessels, monkfish vessels that are in groundfish sectors. So if there's any questions on the previous three, incidental limits, research set aside, and the days at sea and trip limit changes, I'll field questions there. No questions? Sally, I guess.
Sorry, I'm a step behind, I think. Could you just explain again how the ACT and the ACLs are delinked, or however you described it? Could you just describe it again so that
the
I
ACT,
understand that a little bit better?
The ACT proposals are based on an increase or based on the current target tack, adding in estimated discards, and either holding it the same or increasing it incrementally. There is a resulting buffer to the ACL, but we're not selecting the ACT based on a buffer to the ACL. Because we don't have a quantitative assessment of management uncertainty, and because we have an assessment in 2010, which is about going to occur about the same time we submit this amendment to NIMS, in which we will get new values for ACL. And if we have a linkage, we base the ACT on the ACL itself, when the ACL changes, so will the ACT and everything else that's associated with that. We don't have the capability to predict what magnitude that change is going to be, so we would have to either encompass what we think a range of outcomes is in the DEIS, and likely that range would be so wide as to be almost meaningless, or we can't really inform the public in the public hearing process what we think the measures are going to look like. If we build it on a specific number, we can say, okay, here's your range of options. You can have 40 days, 30 days, 20 days, here's your trip limits, and this is the numbers you have to choose with from and have at it.
Phil, I don't know if you're aware that we passed, I think we did, any vessel in a sector now, they're exempt from days at sea. Okay? So from groundfish days at sea.
Having to use groundfish days at sea,
right? They'll have monkfish days at sea only, and then they can now go from, I think, in the north, fishing the incidental catch for 365 days a year. How are you going to account for the change that sectors are no longer on a day at sea? They'll have their monkfish only.
In this plan, if nothing's changed in that regard, they will have to use their groundfish day when they're on a monkfish day. And when they're not on a monkfish day, they will be under an incidental limit in the north, 5% of the total weight of fish on board. Although, if they have groundfish days, I don't think there's anything that says they can't use them. So they could go out and fish on a groundfish day with an incidental limit of 300 pounds of tails per day, as long as they had the groundfish days.
I think you're missing my point. In the past, say that a particular vessel had 30 groundfish days.
And 30 monkfish days.
And 30 monkfish. Yes. Now he has unlimited groundfish days until...
No, he doesn't. He still has 30 groundfish days. He just doesn't have to use them when he's in the sector. Because a vessel can go in the sector 1 year, out of the sector next year. It's got the days that's associated with that permit.
Okay.
Rip.
Right?
Just a quick clarification. What we passed was not a total exemption. It was an exemption from the differential days, the decline caused by the differential days. It wasn't eliminating.
I think what we passed was that the cut in days at sea doesn't apply to sector vessels. And that sector vessels do not need to use a day at sea to harvest ground fish.
So they won't be on a day at sea.
They don't need to use a ground fish day to harvest ground fish.
Correct.
But right now they still need to use a ground fish day to use a monkfish day. And they still have those days in their banks in the record of that permit.
Right.
Because a vessel could go into a sector one year, out of a sector the next year, back in another year, and it's got those days still associated with the permit.
Gotcha.
And the vessel may also lease ground fish days, even though it's in a sector, for the purposes of fishing for monkfish under an incidental limit that's higher than the 5%. Could be 300 pounds of tails or 500 pounds of tails. And once we get to it, there's also proposals to relax some of those restrictions. But I didn't. This is under the current management system with no changes.
Based on the existing multi-species plan?
Based on the existing monkfish plan.
Monkfish plan.
The requirements of the plan to use a groundfish day when you're on a monkfish day, an incidental limit when you're on a groundfish, but not a monkfish day, and a different incidental, more restrictive incidental limit when you're not on a groundfish or a monkfish day, which is what would be, you know, a sector vessel not using a groundfish day or a monkfish day.
Dave Preble?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What I've got a problem understanding here, I understand that this is a data poor stock, and that with all of the different fisheries that it's caught in, that there's just a plethora of different kinds of variables. But the ACT, what you're trying to feel comfortable with here is the buffer between the ACL and the ABC / ACL and the ACT. But the tax, the proposed tax, are being stated as a percentage above the current tax rather than this percentage between the ACL and the ACT. And I don't understand why it's like that.
Okay.
Shouldn't it be a percentage?
I attempted to explain that before. There are two reasons primarily why they selected this approach. We debated, the committee and the PDT talked about this a few times. The top-down approach would be to go from the ACL and say, okay, you know, we think our management uncertainty is 30% or 40% or 50%. So we just go from the ACL. That's our ACT, whatever that number that is decided. The problem with that is we don't have the ability to really quantify management uncertainty. It would be an arbitrary choice. Secondly, when the ACL changes, which it will at the next assessment, because the estimate's current biomass will change. They may go up, they may go down. So will that, if you link it to that. So when you're going out to public hearing with a range of management measures based on an ACT, and then that ACT changes after we've submitted the amendment, so will all the days at sea and trip limits associated with that number. Okay? So we can't really do it that way. The bottoms-up approach, which is what we're doing here, it would fix the number. And what will change is the buffer, but that's where your comfort comes in.
Dave Gaither?
I want to go back just a second to the other discussion that was being had, you know. If the Affleck duck was here, I think you'd have heard a big squawk. Because this amendment won't be done until sectors have operated for at least a year, sectors will be operating under the existing monkfish plan. If a sector vessel doesn't declare a monkfish day at sea, it'll be limited in the north anyway to 5% of the fish that are on board, right?
Unless it uses a groundfish day.
Don't understand how it can use a groundfish day. It doesn't have groundfish days anymore.
It does. It's just not required to use them to fish for groundfish in a sector. But if they want to target 300 pounds of tails, they can call a groundfish day and go under the incidental monkfish limit.
What, why do they have to even call a groundfish day? Why can't they just call a monkfish day? Isn't that the same thing?
Well, then they have to burn a groundfish day. Then they can go for, what is it, 1,200 right now for the A and C boats and 470 or something for the B and D boats.
Right, under the monkfish day at sea.
Right. But if they run out of monkfish days, they get 30 days, I believe it is. And if they run out of monkfish days, they can still use groundfish days and fish under the 300 pounds of tails.
The incidental...
When you're on a groundfish but not a monkfish day.
Catch limit. Yeah, and that's still different than the 5%. This is the part, apparently, that I'm having a hard time with.
Okay, there are three categories of catch allowances. Right. There's when you're on a monkfish and a groundfish day... When you're on a monkfish day,
right.
When you're on a groundfish but not a monkfish day, and when you're not on a day at sea at all, three limits. Depending on your permit category, it's 475 and 1,200 something. The second one is 300 pounds of tails, and the third one is 5%.
Okay. That's the part I didn't get. I didn't know there were three. I thought there were only two. I thought it was either 5% or you were on a monkfish day. No. I didn't think it was...
If you're on a groundfish but not a monkfish day, it's 300 pounds.
Okay.
In the north.
In the north. So, and then there's a different incidental catch in some small mesh fisheries but not others? Some have zero possession limits, some have 50 pounds
50
or something.
Pounds.
That's still a fourth
right.
category.
Small mesh fisheries.
Okay. I mean, if somehow we're going to have to explain this all to the industry, if we can't get it,
well,
you know, we got
the
real
people
problems
are fishing
here.
Under this, the people that are fishing under this do get it. I mean, they all know what they're allowed to catch and land.
Well, I'm fishing under it, and I don't get it. That's my point. I mean, I understood it when we were days at sea boats because it was really only the two categories. You were either on a day at sea and a monkfish day,
that's
or you
right.
were just on a day at sea.
Because you couldn't fish in the Gulf of Maine unless you were on a day at sea or in one of those
right.
exempted fisheries for small mesh fisheries. And they had their own incidental limit.
Right.
But now
in the Gulf
you have,
of Maine, they're all zero. So
now you have vessels that can be not on a groundfish day and not in an exempted fishery. So they would fall in that category
right.
of the 5%.
So there is a third category. Now that's the part we're going to have to... At least I think we're going to have to explain to people. But at least now I understand what you're doing, which I really didn't before.
Anybody else? Phil.
Okay, the next set of measures has to deal with vessels fishing in groundfish sectors and some proposed recommendations for changes to the monkfish plan for those vessels. One of them would be that a monkfish vessel with a groundfish permit that's in a groundfish sector does not have to use a groundfish day at sea when on a monkfish day at sea. The proposal originally was made for the northern area and subsequently amended to include in either area. So you wouldn't now have to use a groundfish day when you're fishing on a monkfish day, if you're in a sector. The second proposal that they're making is to modify the monkfish incidental limit in a groundfish sector and not on a monkfish or a groundfish day at sea. That's the 5% that we were just talking about. They have two options here. One of them would be to set a different incidental limit at 500 pounds tail weight per day. And the second option would be to allow the vessels to fish under a monkfish ACE in lieu of days at sea, trip, or incidental limits. In other words, they would operate not in a monkfish sector, in a groundfish sector, but with monkfish ACE. And I think, yeah, there's a couple more for this group of proposals. C&D vessels, which are monkfish permit categories for vessels that also either have a scallop or a groundfish limited access permit. This proposal would allow Category C and D vessels with groundfish permits to join groundfish sectors for the purpose of using monkfish ACE in 2011 and beyond. And I think, based on the decision that scallop vessels can now hold groundfish permits, we might end up modifying that a little bit. They'd still have the groundfish permit, but they could be scallop vessels too. The second proposal is to allow all limited access monkfish vessels, whether or not they have a groundfish permit, to join groundfish sectors. And this would require declaring Amendment 5 a joint amendment with the Northeast Multispecies Plan so that we can make that modification and allow vessels that don't have groundfish permits to join groundfish sectors for the purpose of using monkfish ACE in 2011 and beyond. Okay. That's the block of adjustments that are being considered for monkfish vessels joining groundfish sectors. There's also proposals to establish monkfish sectors, but we'll get to that in a minute. There are a couple of other measures to be adjusted or considered before we get to that. Questions? No questions.
Any questions? Okay.
There are two other measures that are being considered, recommended for consideration. One is to require all monkfish limited access permit vessels to have a BMS. There would be an option that this would be in one area only or in both areas, and it would include a power down option for when they're not fishing in the monkfish fishery. And the second proposal is to allow vessels to land monkfish heads, provided there's an appropriate head-to-tail ratio. The people have started landing heads. I've heard that they're using them for bait, and I've heard that they're using them for a market, export market or New York Asian market or something. In any case, NIMS enforcement sent out a letter announcing that it was prohibited because there was no way of setting the weight of the whole fish to the head. We have the tail, and it's 3.32 to get to a hole, but the regulations don't have that other part of that equation in them, so they've been prohibited from landing the heads, and this would just simply change the regulations to allow them that, and it would be on a weight basis. They did discuss a count basis, but that didn't, nobody wanted to count heads. Questions? Next. Okay, there are The one of the things the committee did early on, this was not a motion of the committee, but they agreed when they first considered catch share programs, and there was some disagreements among, tended to be a geographical thing, that they were going to advise council that they might consider different management strategies for the two different areas. That is, to retain the effort controls in one area and to allow some sort of catch share program in another area. I'm not sure if this necessarily carries as much weight as it seemed to at the beginning, because right now, you know, vessel in the groundfish sector is not limited by the monkfish area boundaries, and so you know, they can go in and out as it is. Anyway, committee is recommending consideration of both sectors and ITQs. And for the details on these proposals, I will refer you to document number 1B,
in the package, which is the most recent proposal. In terms of the qualification periods and qualification criteria, it tends to it's the same. Then for the there are some specific items relating to the referendum and the voting waiting of the voting. There are several options for waiting of the votes to consider captains, and then some other details here and some background information. If the ITQ proposal goes forward, we have to develop the ITQ program prior to holding the referendum. And the right now there are three options in here for terms of qualification and weighting of the votes. But I think that we still need to work on some more details of how this referendum would be conducted.
Any questions? David?
If you go to an ITQ program, you're going to have allocation options for both the commercial and the recreational fishery, right? Is that included? I see allocation options. Strawman proposals outlines allocation options. So there'll be options for both the commercial and the rec. We've got to allocate the fish across the spectrum, right?
John, I can suggest an answer for that. I think that in terms of monkfish, the recreational catch of monkfish is probably more like an incidental catch on a surf clam dredge or something. I mean, there aren't that many. Maybe more than surf clam dredges, but monkfish is caught everywhere, but to varying degrees. We know that scallop dredge vessels have a higher incidental catch than a surf clam dredge. Monkfish on recreational catch of monkfish probably falls at the lower end of the spectrum. And either sector or ITQ programs are going to have to develop a way to deal with the incidental catch. There's, one way of dealing with it is to just carve out a portion of the ACT and just say that's the incidental catch, and the other is distributed under the catch share program to directed catch. Another would be that everybody gets a share, and so the scallopers would have to buy up adequate amounts under an ITQ program or somehow deal with a sector so they could pool their incidental catch ACE. Those details haven't fully been fleshed out yet.
Okay, but at least you've thought about it, because I know I caught monkfish when I ran a party boat. Not a lot, like you said, but we did catch them. And in this day and age of having to count every last fish, we're going to have to do something with all these fisheries that catch small amounts of these things. I mean, we've batted around de minimis status and things like that, and I don't think we've come up with a real satisfactory answer. But I suppose you could lump them all together, an incidental catch, say it's less than 5%, put a bunch of fisheries there and be done with it. But I just want to make sure you've considered it, that's all.
Yeah, regarding the straw man proposal for ITQs, the ITQ document that we have in our binder, that wasn't approved at the May meeting, was it? Wasn't that approved at a previous meeting?
They made some modifications based on input from the advisory panel and discussions and comments, and you haven't heard yet from Maggie, but she, as chairman of the AP, is going to give you a brief summary there.
Okay, so just to make sure I know how this was produced, I think I do. This is an industry proposal, right? Maggie in particular, I believe, working with others with whom she associates, put together this ITQ referendum proposal, all right?
It's a sector, it's a catch share proposal that has some ITQ-specific components,
but some overlapping components.
Okay, so that was developed by Maggie and Company. The advisors looked at it and they agreed with it.
They made some changes to the original proposal.
Okay, and then the committee looked at it and made some changes too. Okay. Was there any involvement by the plan development team in any of the ITQ discussion yet, or is this solely...
The summary of the PDT's discussion on catch share is in the PDT report, document 1A. The last item, number 16, which is on page 8. And essentially it says that the PDT members all agreed that it would be unrealistic to consider and develop sectors or ITQs considering the timeline for Amendment 5. Most, if not all, members support some sort of catch share approach and agreed that it's not feasible at this time.
Thanks, Phil.
Rip.
Thank you. I hope the committee is working on the Blount alternative to land skinless tails, as long as they're from legal sized fish.
Ooh, skinless heads.
Anyone else? Phil?
What's next? You vote today on the measures to be considered, and we will be off and running with our analysis and preparation of the EIS. November meeting is approval of the DEIS, and we don't need to go to the Mid-Atlantic to approve that document to go to public hearings, so we'll sometime January, February, hold public hearings once the EIS has been submitted to the EPA and notice of the hearings has been published. Final approval in April, and implementation gives the agency, well, it gives us after April to finish the document and complete the reg writing and so on, whatever has to be done. Agency will have about 9 months to review and implement the final measures.
Dr. Pierce?
Back to the ITQs for a second, and number 16. Why did the Oversight Committee recommend to this council that we move forward with ITQs and sectors when the Plan Development Team said clearly that we're not ready to do so and it should not be incorporated in this action?
Could you direct that Paul to Howard? The chair of the committee, please?
No, it was the council voted, even considering staff input and everything about timelines, the council voted to still include ITQs. It's the council that voted this.
Fine enough, but when did that council vote occur? Was it prior to or after the plan development team recommendation or conclusion?
The council vote in November to consider these was based on time permitting after we get the other priorities done. And I actually came up and asked confirmation of that after the vote. But your question on why the committee made its decision, you were looking at me, but you might want to ask through the chair to the chairman of the committee.
Well, if I may, Mr. Chairman, I'd appreciate an explanation as to why the committee is not advising us that despite our decision early on to move this forward, time permitting, the plan development team has said, don't do it, you're not ready, and yet the committee is saying move it forward. So just an explanation would be appreciated.
The committee took the council's recommendation and direction to develop a catch share program after the rest of work was done, and they began the work. We've done a bucket load of work in a short period of time. This is an incredibly comprehensive and complicated amendment, but it was the cat share program is important to many members of the committee, many members of the AP, and many members of the public, and the committee felt that it was worth their in our collective work to continue the development of these options. The PDT pushed back a little bit, and the committee's pushing back a little bit as well.
Anyone else? I had a question for the chair of the committee and perhaps the staff, too. How did we end up with a 500-pound-per-day tail weight option? Was that something you picked and then said go analyze it, or was that something that was in the range of analysis that you picked?
Phil may well correct me, but I believe that was something the committee picked to have analyzed.
Has that been analyzed?
To a certain extent, not fully. I have done some analysis.
Paul?
Well, you're going to have several different options to meet your ACT. So 500 might meet, you know, the three ranges of ACTs, whether it's how much risk you want to take. So we have to assume that if 500 would have to fall within one of those three ACTs.
There are several incidental catch options here that would include when you're on a groundfish day but not a monkfish day, and there's also the one that says you don't have to be on either one. If you're in a sector, this 500 pounds would apply. The difficulty with a lot of this is that for each option that then cascades to affect everything else, the range of possibilities to be analyzed goes up exponentially, because you start with one option. If you have two options and then you add an option that could fit either one, that's four, and then you add another option that could fit any of those, so that becomes eight. Do you know what I'm saying? So all of a sudden we're trying to analyze something that is very complicated. Not to say that it can't be done, but can it be done in a couple of months while we're also trying to complete an environmental impact statement? I tend to agree with the rest of the PDT members. It's probably not doable.
How do you analyze, I'm looking at monkfish catch and groundfish sectors, not on a groundfish or monkfish day, remove 5% limit and replace with 500-pound tail weight per day. How do you analyze that?
Well, you look at the range of possible number of vessels, and you look at the limit, and then you look at the, that is the trip limit, the incidental limit, and you can do the math. It's pretty straightforward. In fact, I happen to have the results of that calculation here. There are approximately 700 vessels have expressed an interest in the groundfish sectors, but let's just say you have 300 vessels that are fishing under this. If they all caught 500 pounds of tails a day for 77 days, they would reach the ACL, not the ACT. And that analysis assumes that there's no directed fishery, there is no incidental catch in any other fishery, and that every monkfish that's caught is landed. 300 boats fishing 77 days. So they may not catch 500 pounds every day, but if they fish for 100 days, they don't have to catch 500 pounds every day. So they're going to get to the limit. And the difficulty with this is, when you recall, go back to what the proposed reactive accountability measure is for exceeding the ACL, that is to adjust the ACT on a pound-for-pound basis and impact the directed fishery. But this analysis already assumes there is no directed fishery, so you've already reached that point. It's a frightening number. I was surprised when I saw the results. But what are you going to do? The boats are not limited to the number of days. As long as they have groundfish quota left in their sector bank, they can go fishing for 500 pounds of monkfish tails and lobsters and come back. And they can do it 365 days a year as long as there's groundfish quota in that sector. That's going to blow the monkfish ACL out of the water if they do that. And people in the background here are talking while I'm trying to communicate something that's very difficult to communicate, and I don't appreciate it.
But I want to go back to something you said. You said the analysis assumes there is no directed fishery. But in the
right. All you have to do, you take the ACL, you convert that into pounds of tails, and then you divide that by the 500 pounds and X number of boats.
In the scenario you laid out, maybe it's extreme, right? I mean, 300 boats for 77 days at the 500-pound limit.
Right.
And you exceed the ACT, you actually exceed
ACL.
The ACL.
Correct.
But there's also a directed fishery going on that year.
There could be, yes.
So it would be
fewer days to get
over
there.
The ACL.
Right. And there's also other sources of incidental catch of monkfish.
And the
besides.
But the penalty doesn't accrue to. It accrues to whom? To what?
To the directed fishery the year, the second year after the overage. There is no responsibility for vessels fishing under incidental catch limits to account for their overages.
I think, I'll say directly to the chair, I think you need to really think about this option. I know you didn't have the analysis. It was just throwing a dart at a board, but based on what I've heard, it needs some consideration.
This is new information that Phil emailed me actually while I was here at this meeting, and none of the committee members have seen it. So,
Jenny.
Yeah, my question was, if you take how do you analyze the 5%? Don't you have the same issue because you don't know what you're measuring the 5% against? In other words, a guy if incidental catch can be up to 5% of what's on board?
Yeah.
How do you know what's on board? I mean, how do you know what can possibly be on board?
Well, we haven't quite challenged that one yet, but I think it's doable, at least in terms of, like with this, at the range. You know, we can say, well, we know what the ACE is, or what the total amount of groundfish that's there, and we can say at one extreme it could be this part, and at another extreme, we haven't done that yet, but I think it's doable. It wouldn't be a very extremely robust analysis, but it would give you a sense. Just like this, I mean, not everybody's going to go 500 pounds, but if they only went 300 pounds, it's 129 days out of 365. Or if they caught 250, you might be up to 130 days. And we know that some boats are going to hit the 500 and some boats will hit 300.
Yeah, I think the exercise here is great. So maybe you go to 250, but at some point it can't be a direct fisheries because the number you're talking about is so low. And the intent of the committee was we didn't like the 5% one. We think that has a lot of problems, you know, and we were trying to think of So we picked a number, literally without analysis, of 500. Now we'll go back and say, you know, maybe
right.
it's 250.
Right.
And, you know, at some point, that it can't be a directed fisheries because it's too low.
Right.
Is it, and then you make the choice. Is that better than a 5% one that people, it's really hard to figure out because
yeah.
you don't know how many fish you're going to get on the boat. So that's the process that's going on here. That's
right. Believe me, I'm not defending the 5%. There's complications with that, too. I just, you know, once the committee made this decision and I began to process the implications and try to wrap my mind around analyzing all these combinations of measures, this is one that came out to me, you know, Monday, and I shot it off to Terry once I completed it, and Allison and the rest of the PDT. And, you know, it hasn't had a chance to even be discussed yet, and that may affect people's decisions. My concern is when today, if you're deciding the measures to be put in or not put in, I don't want you to do it on the basis of this one thing that you haven't even seen yet. At the same time, you know, we have a document to prepare by November to meet our Magnuson Act requirements. And if you keep these proposals in, I'm in a difficult position because I got to deliver, but I can't do it myself. And other people working on this have already said it can't be done. It's too complicated, and so you know, we wouldn't be doing it justice if we tried to ram this in this amendment, because we're going to create some problems down the road that are going to come back. In a catastrophic way, I'm afraid to say. And we'll have a new assessment. That may change people's points of view.
Council? Sally?
We started this meeting on Monday with a discussion of the Catch Share Task Force, and I know Paul mentioned the need for at least three staff to do what the council and industry want to do and what staff simply is not able to do because of the scope of the tasks before you. So my question is there a way to, with the understanding that the task force is going to be meeting quickly, was my understanding, in the next month, 6 weeks, to get those resources flowing so that the council is able to respond to the interest that industry has in pursuing some of these approaches that probably one person can't realistically do in the time frame that's available. But if there was additional staff available to work on this, that it might become possible.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I, in principle, I don't disagree with what Sally says. From what I'm hearing here, I don't believe that it's going to come, that we're going to get staff and stuff in any timely fashion or quick enough to help out on this. I mean, if I hear this correctly, we have a real problem here in that you know, there's a chance that we don't meet the Magnuson mandates by trying to cram too much into this amendment. I certainly would like to. I mean, I personally would be very reluctant in trying to move everything forward and jeopardize those things. But I'd kind of like to hear what the committee motion on this was going to be, to so that we could. And to take a look at it and either change it or move it forward.
I guess directly to Sally's question about resources and task force, I was solicited via email to block off three days for meetings in July, so yeah, I mean, they're cooking. They're going to try to get it done August 1st, I guess, but I have no knowledge or concept of
the important part of your question, which is the money and the people and everything else. But I'll make a very strong case about the needs that we have. I can tell you that. Sally?
I mean, the momentum, the loss of momentum over the last hour in this room is kind of stunning. But the interest in industry and the frustration on the part of staff is, it's so clear here. So I appreciate you doing that because, it's incredibly frustrating for staff and for industry to not be able to get done what they very clearly want. So thank you.
John, I have a... I met with regional office staff, NEPA folks, and some of the analysts on the PDT to try and strategize how we're going to handle all this. And from a strategic point of view, there is another option that I'm going to just throw out for your consideration, which would be to not proceed with a DEIS, but to proceed with an environmental assessment for a limited number of the options that the committee's recommended, and none of those are related to cash share programs, but that would allow us to meet our deadline and start earlier on a more comprehensive, deliberative, and well-thought-out process of deciding whether it's an ITQ or a sector or both, and what, get broader input. We've had limited input at the meetings. I wouldn't say that there have been 400, comments coming in from a range of industry participants, which they might be once these things materialize. Because even if we were to do this in this amendment, it wouldn't take effect until 2011. Meanwhile, if we did it deliberatively and did it right, we might have a better chance of a successful program that might be a year later than it otherwise would be. And, that's not something that the PDT has recommended, but they did recommend not considering these catch share programs in this amendment. And so I am prepared to offer what we, a limited number of PDT members, agreed on as far as what could go through and still fall under an environmental assessment level document as opposed to an environmental impact statement.
Well, just for the benefit of the council, I've been talking with the chair of the Mid-Atlantic. If you remember, this is a joint plan. And he's voiced some concerns that have come from his council on what are we doing with this plan? We're moving quickly. If we're going to do an IQ program, they would like an opportunity to craft proposals for the southern half, anyways. He was under the impression we were going to move forward with sectors, and his concern was that the allocation period that we would choose for sectors would somehow benefit the northern votes, and then we'd be somehow less inclined to come back through in a subsequent action and put in a different time period for the southern fishery. Those were his concerns on the phone to me. I did a little digging around and spoke to him again and made it clear that my understanding was that there are two management areas. They can be two discrete management programs. One could be sector. One could be ITQ. They can be based on different time periods for qualification and allocation. There's a whole host of things, and what happens in the north doesn't have to impact what happens in the south. He appreciated that, but also mentioned that
they're on board with the concept of catch share, at least from the southern perspective, but they, I think they want to be a little bit more involved in the design of it. And I told them I would deliver that message. Terry.
Yeah, thank you, John. I just want to read to the council the note that Erling passed me before he left. We are concerned that if sectors are approved ahead of IFQs, IFQs will be put on the back burner and people will lose interest in them. The Mid-Atlantic prefers ITQs.
The simpler way of saying it, I guess. Yeah. So I just offer that up to the council. Anyone on the council? David?
Personally, I thought the primary reason for this amendment was to do ACLs and AMs. And that has to be done by a time certain, right? And it's getting to the point where I can't even talk. I'm so tired. But it would seem to me that that's what we ought to concentrate on in this amendment and put everything else out. If we can get that done by 2011, we'll probably be doing well. So I would start with that and put all the rest of this stuff into an Amendment 6 or whatever, and do what we got to do to satisfy the law. Keep it. What is it? What's that principle called? Keep it simple, stupid, and get on with it.
Dave Pierce, then Mary Beth.
Yeah, well, I'm still waiting for recommendations from the Oversight Committee. I assume there are some. I agree with David that in light of what Phil has said, perhaps we should just stick to the primary purpose for Amendment Number 5 described by Phil in his presentation related to the ACLs and the AMs and the other reference points. We need to comply with the MSRA and the National Standard Number 1 guidelines, and then if it's appropriate, if it can be done in a timely way, then the other bullet that relates to what we're trying to accomplish in this amendment is to set the TTAC, the day at sea, trip limit specifications to replace the expiring framework for specs. Now, can't we just limit Amendment 5 to those two tasks with an understanding that they can be achieved in a timely fashion so we can comply with the law? I know people want the ITQ and sector management programs to move forward, and discussion regarding those particular programs and how we can accomplish these strategies for Monkfish could be pursued, as you indicated, Mr. Chairman, through this task force, at least get the discussions going regarding that. Maybe we can revisit that issue once we find out what the task force is going to offer up for recommendations to all the councils relative to that issue. The PDT has told us very clearly it shouldn't be in Amendment Number 5, can't do it right now for very good reasons. Obviously, I support moving in that direction, but I don't want to create havoc for Phil and the rest of the staff and plan development team. So I guess I should wait until the committee recommendation is before us and then react to it, but as it stands right now, I'm leaning very heavily in favor of just going with the first two bullets for the purpose of this amendment described on page 7 of the handout.
Well, I think that we can have a discussion about what we're going to do here, but I would prefer to hear the AP report and have Terry put the motion on the table instead of just going around in a circle, because I think we're all tired and...
Maggie?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The AP met on June 2nd, and the meeting summary is document 2A in your package. I would like to, first of all, acknowledge the document 1, the decision table, which I'd like to thank the staff and the chairman for putting that together, because I found it very helpful in guiding the discussion of the AP and just as a personal note, this would be a good thing to have on as we go forward in other amendments to the plan, to different plans. We did have a large turnout We did manage to get through all of the items that are on that decision document. Including recommendations to include the catch share proposal, and we had a number of recommendations for changes to that proposal. Prior to our discussion of it, the committee really had not spent a lot of time discussing it. I guess in the interest of time, what I should say is that the committee did adopt the majority of the recommendations of the AP, and those are now reflected in the decision document. If you look to the column to the far right, it shows the committee decision and the SSC decision and the AP decision. So rather than go through each one of those to save time, I would offer to stay here if you'd like, and just if you have any specific questions as you're going through things, I could, and you had a question about what the advisor's position was on it, I could answer that. I think that might be an easier way to move forward. I did want to point out, because of the last discussion, that the Mid-Atlantic Council did vote unanimously to advance all of these options in the DEIS, and so I was there. I'm a little confused about later discussions by the chairman of the council that were not had at that time, so I'm just a little confused about that. But anyway, if the chairman agrees, that I think that might be a better way to move forward. I'll just wait here and see if anybody has any questions.
It's fine, thank you.
Ready for motion?
Yes, please.
Motion that the council approve the range of alternatives as recommended by the Oversight Committee for further development and analysis in the DEIS for Amendment 5 to the Monkfish FMP.
That was not a committee motion, so
that was a committee motion.
There's a committee motion, doesn't need a second. Open it up to council discussion. Dr. Pierce.
Yeah, again, in light of what the plan development team has recommended, and Phil's expressed concern about timelines and getting the job done, you know, by the deadline, I would move to amend the motion that Amendment 5 not include the development of ITQ and or sector management programs.
Motion to amend. Is there a second to that? David Gaito. Discussion on the motion to amend.
The motion as written, I would not support, because I think that this fishery has expressed a lot of interest in moving forward with a catch share plan. They put their time in. Perhaps there are some concerns. At a minimum, we should consider the approach that we took in Herring to split the amendment, get the ACLs off, and let the committee continue to work on this amendment. I can't see just saying, well, we don't have time, so let's just forget about it for now. I just don't think that's the direction we should go in. And I'll listen to more of discussion before offering any amendments to the amendment.
Sally.
I oppose the motion. It's premature. We know that we have an opportunity this summer. Our chairman's going to be working on this task force, hopefully bringing some resources back. If we want to pull this stuff out of the amendment at the end of the summer, then that would be the more appropriate time to do it. While the momentum is there, in the region. The momentum is there in Washington to get some resources flowing this direction. We shouldn't be pulling the plug at this point. So with that, I'll oppose the motion. Thank you.
Terry?
Yeah, quick question to David Pierce. Is your intention to call the section of monkfish vessels joining groundfish sectors out of this as well?
But that wasn't part of my motion. Somebody could make a motion to that effect, but I was focusing specifically on the sectors and ITQs. And if I may, I do acknowledge, again, as I said before, that there is an initiative underway, a major initiative to deal with catch shares. But even with that initiative, will there be enough resources for us to put in this amendment an ITQ strategy or a strategy relative to sectors? Once again, I reflect on the PDT advice, and it didn't sound from the PDT advice that it was just resources. It was more than that. But, I mean, I'm not hell-bent on taking it out of the amendment. I'm just, once again, reacting to advice given to us by the technical people. Anyways, that's my suggestion.
Dave Gay.
Yeah. We've seen this with herring, we've seen it with groundfish, we've seen it with every action we've done in the last 5 years. We continually put too much stuff in an amendment, and then it takes too long to get it done. If we do a reasonable number of things, maybe we can actually do it ahead of time, you know, or at least on time. And then we can start another amendment to do the other issues. But I really think we ought to have a small number of things in here, try and get them done as fast as possible, and move on. If we put ITQs and formation of sectors and everything else in here, this will be like groundfish. We'll and it'll be like herring. We'll be working on it, and all of a sudden, well, we can't do this, so we've got to split the amendment. We'll waste a half of meeting there doing that. I just think it would be a lot simpler to say right up front, this is what we think we can get done. Do it. And then start another amendment after it's done.
Jimmy?
Yeah, my comments are the longer we don't deal with ITQs and sectors and monks, the longer we have dual systems and groundfish. We will have days at sea and groundfish as long as we have days at sea and monkfish, because the rules are you have to burn a day at sea and monkfish in the northern area to have multi-species. I don't know. You have to have both days at sea systems running for a long period of time now going forward, and I'm not so sure that's the direction we've. You know, I'm looking at this thing in a big picture. We're trying to get away from that, and we're just by not attacking this, we're going to continue to have a dual system: days at sea, sectors, ITQs. It's going to be very difficult to track all this.
Rip.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I agree with all the comments. I support the idea of sectors and ITQs for monkfish. I think monkfish is a prime example of something that, from a management standpoint, would benefit greatly from having these things. But it comes down to we are trying to put 5 pounds of doo-doo in a 1 pound doo-doo bag. It's just not going to work. We don't have enough time. It's that simple. You're not going to get it done. You're setting yourself up for failure. You've got to pare this thing down. I'm happy to go along if people want to go along till the end of summer, but I think you're prolonging what is going to have to be done. There is absolutely no way. I hearken back to when we were in 2006 talking about Amendment 16 and the groundfish plan. He said, we got a lot of time to get that done. Well, you got a lot less time to get something like this done, a lot less time, and it's just it's not going to happen.
Anyone else? Maggie?
The Monkfish Advisory Panel does not support this amendment, nor does Associated Fisheries of Maine. Thank you.
Anyone in the audience? Mike?
Yeah, Mike Love, Fishing Vessel Titan. I don't support this at all as it is. To my mind, this decision's already been made. I've always been, really big Days at Sea fan and kind of against the whole sector thing and all that, but seeing as those decisions have already been made and that horse is way out of the barn, I don't see how it continue on a two-track sort of system, part on poundage, part on time. Even though I'm a groundfish boat, mid-sized groundfish boat, if you look at a pie chart of what our earnings are at the end of the year, the biggest profit center is monkfish. And to be like this, it seems we have to either do one thing or the other. So I'd like to support the ITQ way of going. Thank you.
Eric?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Eric Brazier, Hook Association, GB Cod Sectors. We do have a problem here. We do have a dual system, a very complex system. We have overlaps between groundfish and monkfish, and we have gaps between groundfish and monkfish. We have a very short, tight timeline. We have legal requirements. We have an industry that's pushing very hard in the direction of catch shares. I'm almost hesitant to say this because a lot of work has been put into the catch share proposal. And I fully support it in its draft form and think that whatever happens, we need to continue to flesh out those details. But I offer up a solution that may simplify things, and I'd urge the council to consider it. We just spent almost 20 hours discussing groundfish. What if we take monkfish and pretend it's another groundfish stock? I forget how many groundfish stocks we have now that we're allocating. Is it 17 or 18 or 19? Make this the 20th stock. The allocation would be the same, the monitoring would be the same, the weekly reports, it would all be essentially incorporated into what we've just done. And I only say that because, we are moving forward with groundfish sectors, and we have an opportunity to do something, a temporary fix, and as long as we make it known that it is a temporary fix, it's a short-term fix, there won't be any lasting effects, it's a voluntary program, everybody will know what they're getting into, and everybody will know full well in the beginning that once we close the door on this amendment and move to the next one, as Dr. Pierce said, that would be the opportunity to take a more detailed and comprehensive look at catch shares overall. And I fully support that. But I also think that we have an opportunity to very quickly and simply address the short-term needs and interests of the fishery, potentially through what I had suggested. Thank you.
Alex?
Hi, Alex Bauermeister, Environmental Defense Fund, and I appreciate the workload that you're trying to negotiate here, but there are a couple of factors where I would encourage you to keep this in the document and move forward. So the first point is task force funding. You'll know more by the end of the summer, and if you're going to split off the amendment then, at least you'll have more information about the reality of the resources you're working with. The second point is the fact that there's tremendous overlap within these fisheries. You have ground fishermen, monk fishermen, and general category scallopers who are going to be under IFQ next March. There's a ton of overlap among these fishermen. We're talking about different fisheries here, but we're largely talking about the same fishermen. If you don't get on track now to allocate this fishery and to find a way to consolidate these currencies of days at sea, quota, with Amendment 5 allocating the fishery, there would already be a one-year gap. Amendment 5 is supposed to be implemented in May of 2011. Groundfish sectors are going to start in 2010. So that's already a one-year gap. If you delay allocating this fishery, or at least creating a means for monk fishermen to take their allocation with them into groundfish sectors, that's going to be longer than 1 year of a gap. So I just ask you to bear that in mind. I think that it's premature to either take these options out or even to split the amendment. Don't mean to make anyone's life harder, but we're looking at a changing reality here, and we need to get current. Thank you.
Back to the council. Pat?
Yeah. I can't support the motion as it's written. I think ACLs and AMs need to be our priority, and that needs to be what we finish first, and that we meet the deadlines. But at the same time, I'm concerned that we need to keep the momentum going on the ITQ discussion and the sector discussion. So I think at some point we are going to have to split this. I don't think there's any question that we're going to have to split it. But I'd like to see the committee continue to have both the discussions until we absolutely have to make that decision. So I'm uncomfortable with the motion to amend.
Anyone else? Ready for the question? Mary Beth?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to make a motion to substitute. Is that procedurally? I'm kind of tired at the moment, but it's all right. Is it possible to substitute it with a committee motion to bring that back? Or is it?
This is an amendment to the committee motion.
Right.
You can vote this down.
You can vote it up and down, and you back on. Then you
just vote it down?
Yeah, on the main motion.
All right.
Anyone else? Ready for the question on the motion to amend? All those in favor, raise your hand. On the motion to amend.
One, two, three.
Four. Opposed. Twelve opposed. Abstentions. Motion to amend fails 4-12. Back on the main motion. Maggie?
I mean, other than actually picking the ACL and the ACT and the AM out of the different options, isn't that, I mean, other than the analysis of the impacts of it and all that, isn't that, I mean, that work is done, right? Those options are developed. We're not going to have any additional options coming forward. So we need to analyze them in both. Pick a preferred, right?
For many of these, there aren't even no actions. It's, you know, there's not like a range of options. There are for the ACTs, but the other ones there aren't. What has to be done between now and the middle of August, which is only about 7 weeks away? We have to finalize all the measures. That includes the trip limits, days at sea, associated with the specifications for the three ACT options, if you keep three ACT options in there. There are those other measures about adjusting the current system part of the specification process, like the prior notice of landing, landing heads, VMS requirement, changes to the RSA, those items that don't require an extensive amount of analysis. Many of them are procedural and so on, but they still have to be written up, and the amendment document, other parts of the amendment document, including impacts on protected species, habitat, et cetera, have to be determined and analyzed. So it's not just, you know, okay, we've decided on the ACLs and the ABCs and the OFLs. What else is there? Well, you know, these documents we have 6 or 7 weeks to essentially, finalize all these measures and do the analysis, the days at sea and trip limits. That's the specifications part of the priority list. If the task force is meeting in early August, You know, we have on the timeline deciding on final measures by the middle of August, so by I can complete the draft EIS in 2 or 3 weeks and get it over to the regional office for review so we can make our October 31st distribution to the council for the November vote. There may be a few days here or there we can push these little deadlines, but, you know.
Jim?
Now, one of the, by law, we have to develop accountability measures. If we developed ITQ, isn't that a, oh, just for instance, that takes care of your accountability measure issue. Or even sectors. I think we've got to stay pressing forward for a while.
Okay. Anything new? Paul?
I'd say this is the opportunity to make sure the PDT is analyzing options that aren't in there, and I'll just ask the council to consider one, and that would be as we're moving towards ITQs and sectors, it seems awful crazy to have options for landing ahead and having ratios, tails and having ratios, and whole weight. I would like to see someone look at an option that just has you required to land the whole fish and analyze that and the impacts of that.
Anyone else want to hang anything on the Christmas tree? Anything else? As the chair, you and the PDT are going to take a look at that 500-pound deal, right?
Among other things. I'm going to be on the phone with Phil first next week. We'll put together a game plan, get some meetings scheduled, and keep on plugging.
Okay. Ready for the question? All those in favor, raise your hand. Opposed, 1, abstentions, 1, motion carries 14-1 with 1 abstention. Terry, anything?
I'm burnt.
Anything else under monkfish? All right, people, well, congratulations. Enjoy your summers. Karen and Juanita, amazing. Thank you for keeping us honest on the board. 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 Honest on the board.